Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Good Morning Pride. My name is Eric Schlitt, and I am once again welcomed by a very special guest. It is becoming a bit of a routine for us here, Ryan Matthews, senior editor over at Pride of Detroit. But here we are for episode 3, and I know I promised that we're going to have more Pride of Detroit members on, and we will. But I think people really like the chemistry, so Ryan and I feel compelled to do another quick short podcast for our listeners, and we want to get it out there ready for your Monday commute. So welcome, Ryan. Nice to see you again, buddy.
Nice to see you too. I'm happy to be back. I'm never going to complain about coming back. And also, maybe I'm just the only one who's volunteering. I promise I'm not being voluntold to be on this podcast. I'm having too much fun talking the draft with Eric.
No, I have two other guys set up, and I'm trying to work out times for them right now. So we will have more Ryan Matthews, of course, but there will be a couple other Pride of Detroit guests that we'll have on the show. Hopefully this week. That would be the most ideal. But like I said, I'm trying to finalize that right now. Today, we are going to do what we always do, and that is allow our guest, Ryan, to set the tone, set the topic. Tell us what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, that's me. I'm excited to talk about this because it is draft oriented, but it's also, I think, a look at the roster and the personnel itself too, and where this football team is kind of situated amongst the top tier talent. So let's start with the first question, Eric. I want to talk to you about how you view the Lions' talent level at this current juncture. Are the Detroit Lions a football team that belongs in that pantheon club of football teams in the NFL today? And I'm talking the Kansas City Chiefs. I'm talking the San Francisco 49ers. I'm talking maybe the Baltimore Ravens belong in there too. It seems kind of cheap to just say, well, you know, the teams that were in the Super Bowl last year, but
sure.
You know, are the Lions a part of that top tier of football team heading into 2024 as they're constructed right now?
I think the most common theme amongst those three teams that you mentioned, and there I think we could maybe discuss whether other teams are involved in this same, but I think the one commonality between those three teams is that there is a longevity of success, right?
Yeah.
They haven't they're not just like, hey, we made the push and got all the way to the Super Bowl one year and now we're kind of out. Or they haven't had the reset. They've just been kind of retooling and progressing forward. They've been in the playoffs pretty consistently. And they have rosters that are built for success, long-term, short-term. And they've really, the organizations have done things to put themselves in a way that they have some sustainability. So
agreed. Yeah.
So are the Lions in that conversation? I think they're very close. We've seen the way that this roster has been built over the last 3 years, and it is built for that sustainability, for long-term success. And we saw the fruitions of that in last year's success, that they made a run for it. And while the NFL is always, you know, a very difficult league to get wins in, if you build a team the right way, there's a chance for you to have that sustained success. I do think the Lions are on the precipice of that, but I don't necessarily think they're there. And I think there's a few more things that they are going to have to do in order to get themselves into a spot where, you know, they become a team that can really overcome anything. And I think that's what you see with these teams, with Kansas City, with the 49ers, just to use last year's two Super Bowl teams. They are built with superstars. They're built with a philosophy of success that suits those superstars, but they also have a ton of depth and they're adaptable. And so those, you know, factors, when you add them all together, it helps them get through a whole season, be ready for the playoffs, and then find a way to be successful in the playoffs. I think the Lions have a lot of those components, but there are a couple things that they're missing. So I would say right on the cusp of where they need to be. You agree with me?
I think I do agree with you. And I want to be clear too that it's almost a bit of an unfair question in a sense, because to your point, Eric, those teams have proved that they are sustainable. The Lions just haven't had that shot, right? Their window's open now. So this is the opportunity for them to prove it. So it feels like I don't want to keep them out of the tier, but I almost want to label their grade, so to speak, as incomplete, right? We don't have all the evidence to weigh them against a team like Baltimore, who has had sustained success, and Kansas City and San Francisco. And to your point, those are all teams that have dealt with great adversity. How many games has Lamar Jackson missed, but the Ravens still sneak into the wild card? How many games, you know, San Francisco, right? Like, we're so far removed from the Jimmy Garoppolo days, and it's Brock Purdy now. So there's just a lot of adversity that those teams can overcome, and that kind of speaks to your overarching point. But I want to know now, what is going to help keep them a sustainable success, and where do you find that in the draft? Maybe I don't know if I'm specifically talking about position, or if I'm talking about what quality does their team need to add in terms of abilities or in terms of talent that will help sustain them and keep them in the conversation and in that tier and in contention.
So I'm going to back up even pre-draft just a little bit to talk about some things that they need to do. One of the big things they need to do, in my opinion, is they need to have their pillar players locked up for the future, right? Like right now they don't. There's a lot of, you know, questions up in the air, and it sure seems like they're mostly going to be a team that needs to, you know, make sure they get their quarterback under wraps, make sure they get their wide receiver under wraps. Like,
let's define who those pillar guys are on this roster.
Mm-hmm. So what they need is they need guys to, like Jared Goff, right? Like Jared Goff is the guy that they need in order to sustain their success, because without that top quarterback, it's going to be a difficult road for them to get to where they need to be, right? So if you're hitting the reset button by trying to like acquire a quarterback in the draft, there's a hard learning curve for that. Like you'd have to have a near perfect roster in order to be able to hit on a quarterback. For example, San Fran had built such a monster that they were able to add that rookie quarterback and they just happened to land a guy late. The plan wasn't for Brock Purdy to be their starter. Like, they drafted him in the seventh round, right? That was for a reason. So they had the rosters to sustain that. So with Detroit, I don't know if their roster is quite there. So having that veteran quarterback that can help you be successful now in this window, I think is a big priority. So I think they're going to try. That's one of the reasons why they're going to try and lock up Jared Goff. St. Brown is the next guy. You have to have another. He's a leader beyond what he does on the field. And he's another guy we all expect to get a long-term contract with. Penei Sewell's the other. We expect a fifth-year option, but then a long-term deal after that. And so, like, those three guys, I think right now, are the ones who are in the immediacy that you need to make sure you get extensions with. Beyond that, you have a few younger guys on defense who are role players with potential. The highest of that potential is Aleem McNeil. Mm-hmm. If he is going to be the guy you think he is, you're going to want to get him into a contract extension. You traded for Carlton Davis. You're probably going to get him a contract extension, even if he's just a starter, even if he's not ends up being shut down one. He still needs to be a guy you look at. Derek Barnes and Iffy are guys I think you'd like to get contract extensions with, but you're not feeling the pressure like you do with the St. Browns, the Sewells, the Goffs, and even the McNeils. So you get those four kind of superstars under contract for a longer period of time, you're going to feel a lot better in how you can be successful. If you're going to get Taylor Decker, that'd be great too. Get him. If you're going to keep him, that gives you some stability. If you're not going to go beyond this year with Taylor Decker, then that changes how you approach this draft. You may have to find a replacement for him in this draft to have him ready. So you got to get those four kind of guys under wraps. And once you get those four guys under wraps, then you can start looking at a couple of those other spots. Can I invest in him? Is he going to cost too much? And I feel like they're already kind of making those decisions. Once specifically, they did it with Jonah Jackson, right?
Mm-hmm.
They made a decision that the price was more than what they thought they could afford, considering the other guys they wanted to extend. But I think getting to the point where your roster is going to be successful for the next half decade, you've got to hit those. You got to get those four guys, or at least the three, you know, St. Brown, Sewell, Goff, got to get those guys in good spots.
Okay, so I think this brings us to, I want to talk about this more because I think that this is fascinating, because I think that there are a few things that I find very interesting about these pillars that we're talking about. And these are just questions. By no means do I believe in these things. I just want to talk about some of the discourse that I think I see outside of Lions Twitter, which how the league views a player like Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think that internally, as Lions fans, and getting a chance to see him in the way that he competes, he's a competitor in every sense, tough as nails, works harder than anybody on the team. But I think from the outside looking in, there are a lot of people who view him as he's a really, really good slot receiver. Like, he's awesome. Like, he's cool, but he's not a top 10 wide receiver, right?
Well, Pro Bowl voting said that, right?
yeah, exactly. And, yes, I think that that's a great indicator of the national pulse of Amon-Ra St. Brown. But I agree with you, Eric, 100%. I think that Amon-Ra St. Brown is a pillar for two reasons. One, he's an incredible talent. And two, he embodies everything that this culture shift started back in 2021, right? Like, this is a guy that they identified for more than just football reasons. Just so happens he's an awesome wide receiver. And I don't like the idea of him being typecasted as a slot guy. He's elite in the slot, don't get me wrong, but this guy, you can move him around. He's very versatile. And I think that he's absolutely a pillar. My question is about Aleem McNeil, though. And you know how much I love Aleem McNeil, but talking about these teams that belong in this pantheon in that top tier, we talked about the San Francisco 49ers. The San Francisco 49ers are a team who had to make difficult decisions. They traded DeForest Buckner. You know, in 2020, and that was pretty shocking. They had to make a move. They couldn't afford, you know, they couldn't afford the likes of all the talent that they had, you know, accumulated on that defensive line with Eric Armstead, and Nick Bosa, right? It was just it was going to be too expensive. Somebody had to get moved. Is Aleem McNeil that guy? Is Aleem McNeil the guy that might be left without a seat at the table just because of the flip side, like the investment in the offensive line? And one of those pillars is Penei Sewell, right? You have to pay Penei Sewell. Frank Ragnow's getting paid. Is Taylor Decker part of the future? And I know you talk about this a lot when it comes to how to sustain that offensive line by, you know, moving in and grabbing draft picks so that you can kind of keep things level. But is Aleem McNeil going to come at the cost of an elite offensive line that you're paying through the nose for?
I think if you're looking at the San Fran model, they continually invested in their defensive line. Like, they had multiple first round picks on that defensive line. Like, so, and they did that, I think, knowing they probably were going to have to make one of those hard decisions at the defensive line. For Detroit, I do think it's the offensive line. And I think they did make their hard decision on Jonah Jackson. So I think they're already kind of...
Okay, that's interesting, yeah.
Right, they're making these decisions. Defensive line, so the Lions defensive line, maybe they're going to treat that kind of like San Fran treats their offensive line, which is you're going to get some middling players, but you're going to have to keep your couple of elite guys in order to make sure that the line stays at its spot. And that's kind of how the Lions...
Your Trent Williams. Defensive.
Right. And so you've got your Hutchinson, but beyond Hutchinson, you've invested in players that can do a lot of different things and can help and play different positions, kind of like San Fran's offensive line. But I do think Aleem is the second best player on that defensive line. And so
I agree too. I agree. Yeah,
right.
I love so, Aleem, man.
Mm-hmm. So the trick becomes, can you afford to lose him and just leave Aiden by himself and, you know, without another elite player? And I think that's too difficult because as much as I love DJ Reader, he's turning 30, right?
Yeah, he's at that point.
Pretty soon. And so we talk about it all the time. When players hit 30, you can't look at them as elite investment players. Like, you have to have alternative plans because you never know when the ball's going to roll off the table with their careers once they hit players hit 30. It's just the way the NFL works. So I do think Aleem is a guy that they are going to need to make a move on, and they're going to need to try and find the money to keep him. If they don't keep him, you're going to have a very high option. Like, you're talking about like drafting if Aleem isn't in the cards, a defensive tackle at 29 or is like something that you would need to do in order to keep that defensive line where it's at, because it has been a weak point. Like, you've had different guys. Aleem has shined, but it's been a weak point, and it's been a big reason that lack of interior pressure and lack of, and it has really, I think, hurt the Lions' ability to pressure the quarterback, which in turn has hurt the coverage, which in turn has hurt the defense. So you can't, if you lose Aleem, yeah, that just gets worse, right?
Yeah.
And even if you draft a guy at 29, like, you're giving yourself a year to try and make up the difference. It took Aleem 2 years to get to where he is, right? Like, it's not like it's an overnight thing with defensive tackles. And if not, you're going to have to go in free agency and pay for a player. And if you're going to go in free agency and play for a player, why don't you just pay Aleem? Now, I know Aleem's going to make a lot more, but to get that kind of impact, you're going to have to pay for it. So it does get really tricky with Aleem, because what's his price tag? What is he asking versus what the Lions think they're going to be able to afford? And as much as, like, we've seen teams succeed by overspending on one side of the ball, I think that's dangerous. That's a dangerous way to run a team. Like, if you have this elite offensive line, if you've spent on Amon-Ra, spent on your quarterback, spent on Sewell, and then they have some off games and they can't put up, you know, enough points, and your defense is now less in the bottom half of the league, you're going to lose games and you're not going to make it to the Super Bowl. You're not going to make that extra push. So with Aleem, he is really a kind of a big catalyst, in my opinion, of a guy, or you got to have an answer at that spot.
Yeah.
And that's why I think we have gone into this each off season and said, and defensive tackle is a spot they really need to address. And while they did address it with DJ Reader, long term, you're going to have to, this is a spot they're going to have to pay attention to. And the easiest solution is to find a way to get an extension with Aleem, in my opinion.
I think in my opinion too. And the thing that's in vogue amongst people out from the outside looking in, we talked about this on our first couple of podcasts, Eric, but the idea of pairing Aiden Hutchinson with somebody. Mm-hmm. And I really don't think it needs to be an edge rusher. I don't think it needs to be an edge guy. I think it can be a guy who has the pass rushing chops and the pass rushing juice from the interior that could totally be a perfect pair for Aiden Hutchinson. I don't know if Aleem McNeil is that guy, but those guys don't grow on trees. You know what I mean?
Right.
Those are the Aaron Donalds and the Chris Jones. The list is really short. It's not, you know, and one of those guys is retired now. So, but the thing that's fascinating to me is you look at, and I'm going to go back to that San Francisco situation, but they trade DeForest Buckner. They end up drafting Javon Kinlaw in the first round.
Right.
And you saw that 1-to-1. You saw okay, they're not going to make the financial commitment to Buckner. They get a high draft pick for him, I think at 13, and then they eventually move back a spot. But they used a 14th overall pick on an interior defensive lineman. It didn't work out. Javon Kinlaw has struggled to stay healthy. Now he's a New York Jet. It didn't work out. Knowing that having enough tape and being able to see enough snaps from Malik McNeil to know that he's a difference maker, both in the run game and what he provides as a pass rusher. And I'm really excited. I think that's maybe one of my favorite storylines going into the season is how much is DJ Reader going to open up for Malik McNeil to get
this. I think he hit the nail on the head right there. Right.
Yeah.
Like what, as much as we look at these guys and we say their talent individually is what makes them great, their success is not talent alone. They have to have pairings around them. If you have a guy that can work in unison with you to make your job easier, you're going to be more successful. And you see that on offense. You see that on the offensive line because, you know, even you can, if a guard gets injured, you can put another guard in there and they're still going to be a really good offensive line because you have three all pros on the line, right?
Yeah, turn to your left or
two now. But yeah,
turn to your left or right, and you're going to see Frank Ragnow or Penei Sewell. And it's like, okay, I'm going to be all right.
Exactly, right? It's Pro Bowlers galore. And so, so with defense, they've never really had the guys to complement more than just a couple of players. And
can we talk about the guys who played alongside Ali McNeil?
Sure.
Like let's recall the guys.
Well, last year, okay, so the year before, okay, so if we go back.
Yeah, Michael Brockers.
Michael Brockers, who basically fell off the earth that season and became almost unplayable by the end of Aleem's rookie year.
And I'm not saying that's going to happen to DJ Reader. Okay, I want to be very clear that I say this, but that's
Brockers was older too. But yeah,
he was. And going back to your point, though, Eric, that's why you need to prepare for what's ahead, right? Like it happens in a hurry. Like I don't think we thought when the Lions got Brockers. I mean, we understood that he was probably on the other side of his career,
right?
But it was a precipitous fall. It was a
right. Yeah, he was still impactful.
Shelf.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He was still impactful that year before he joined Detroit, and he actually was pretty good the first half of the season, maybe, and then he struggled a lot. And he had a rookie next to him too, which didn't, I think, you know, made his life a little harder as well.
Sure.
He lost Levi that year. So he, you know, you really didn't get much out of him. Eventually Brockers gets replaced by Isaiah Bugs, who then gets replaced by Benito Jones. And Isaiah Bugs, I think, re-signed a futures deal with Kansas City or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. And Benito Jones signed a contract as well. I'm blanking where it's with. I want to say the Jets, but it's not the Jets. I think it's I was thinking Jets because I think
a New York team earlier. Is it a New York team?
I don't remember. I'm not going to look it up either because
he's
not
wishes.
On the team. He's not on the team anymore. So
maybe the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I could be wrong. I don't know.
But
it's
just
neither here nor
right.
There. Thanks for your services. But yeah. Tyson Alualu, right? Isn't a murderer's row of interior defensive linemen that McNeil has played next to.
Right. And I think that's, you've seen his growth, but you've also seen offensive lines say, boy, I can double Aleem and I can double Eden. And then I can one-on-one the other two guys, no matter who it is. And I'm typically going to be fine. They weren't necessarily fine when James Houston all of a sudden burst onto the scene, because then it was like, uh-oh, how do I block everyone now? And so you're hoping James Houston can recover to that, or they can find a guy who can. But to your point earlier, that pressure doesn't have to come from the outside. It can come from the inside. And so Reader is a double team, demands a double team. He's just too strong. Now, being 30, is he going to require the double team as often as he has in the past? No, probably not. I still think Aleem's going to get a ton of attention. But Reader's just too strong. He's just too strong, and he still has that. He, like Aleem, is the rare cat who can play anywhere from the 0 to the 3.
He
can run stop and pass rush. Like it's rare to have two guys like that on the same team. So,
yeah. And Eric, I don't think you want to be the team that is banking on DJ Reader losing a step and like not double teaming him. You know what I mean?
Right.
I don't think you want to be caught in that position where you're, hey, you know what? We could probably just, you know, our center can take care of DJ Reader.
Right.
I don't think so.
And now if you add a defensive tackle in the draft who can give you some interior pressure, now all of a sudden you have a rotation of guys who can bring the heat up the middle, and it gets a little, and it's harder for offensive lines to sustain. And if you, you know, or if you don't go on, if you don't go to the interior pressure, then maybe you, then you look at a guy like who can bend the edge, or maybe you're hoping you can get James Houston back to form, or, you know, if you have to find at least one more avenue for pressure, and it could be a rotational defensive tackle, it could be an edge rusher, but to get to the spot where they need to be to kind of take that next step on defense, it starts with finding a player who even situationally can bring pressure. And I think that's why defensive tackles in play. I think edge is always going to be in play, but if they can, and that's one of the reasons why they went and got Davenport, who I think I continue to forget about all the time.
All the time.
Right.
Every day I wake up, it's Groundhog Day.
Oh, Davenport's on the team. Right. And so
it's always surprising to find out. It's like, Marcus Davenport. Like, forgot they took a swing on him.
I can't tell you how many times I've looked at like a mock draft or thought about putting one together, and I've been like, man, I don't know who edge four is. It's crazy. Who are they going to take? Oh, wait, they have Marcus Davenport that they're taking a flyer on. Oh, let's see how that works.
Yeah.
So the fact that they spent money on Davenport and Reader in free agency, I think speaks to the fact that they know they've got to find somebody who can get some pressure beyond Aleem and Hutchinson. So you find that guy, it just makes everything easier. You've seen your linebackers step up. Now, if you add another pressure element guy on the defensive line, you're just going to be able to level that up a little bit more, makes things easier on your corners. If you have the upgrades that you're hoping to have, if you can add more talent, great. But they're laying the foundation for them to be ready now, have a better team now on defense for this year. In order for them to be good beyond this year, though, you either have to draft players that can grow into these roles. Like,
yeah,
you're hoping Broderick Martin becomes DG Reader, right? That would be ideal.
That would be great.
Right. That's your ideal. They're both massive human beings with a great first step, and you know, they can run stop. So they're interesting. DJ could be a huge asset for Broderick. So you need to put guys in place, or you need to sustain your pillars, and Aleem is going to be part of that. The tricky part becomes beyond Aiden, who's going to need a contract in a couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. Do you have another guy right now that you need to invest in? And I don't know if they do. If there's not another like pending guy where you're like, they absolutely have to give this guy an extension. And I don't think there's anyone else that's going to demand like, you know, $15 million and up, right? Other than like Aleem and Hutchinson. And so if you have just those two guys on defense, but then you have Amon-Ra and Sewell and then Goff, and then, well, Frank's going to be up there as well. Like, you can still live with all of that. Like, you can still live with, you know, Taylor Decker coming back because his contract would probably go down being the age he's at.
Sure.
And so you can live with having these like 5, 6, 7 high priced guys. The trick is if you're going to have 5, 6, 7 high priced guys, which San Fran has, which Baltimore has, which, you know, Kansas City has, if you have those guys in place, you have to be able to have enough talent all over the rest of the roster to be able to sustain it. And so that's where the depth element comes in, right?
That's why drafting is so important.
Right.
And
so
that's been something that hasn't happened in Detroit in how many years, Eric? And and it seems like you know what I mean? It seems like uncharted territory for a lot of us, which is why the draft is still so important, even this one.
100%. 100%. And this one, this draft, see, we talked about this before, in our first couple episodes. We talked about the fact that the first three drafts were about acquiring as much talent as you could and then getting players that could come in and potentially make an impact. We've seen how that impact translates to success, and they're at a point where they are in that Super Bowl window now. Now your philosophy in the draft changes away from building a winner to sustaining a winner. And now it's, okay, where are my weak spots depth-wise? If I lose a player, do I have a backup that can step in and help us, you know, without losing too much talent? Do I have a guy that I can have under contract in 2025 and beyond? And that's why this draft is important. This draft is about getting foundational players for stability, not necessarily like foundational players for your elite talent. This is a sustained draft. And ideally, you're drafting for sustainability from now on, right? And then, and if you are, that means you have a winner. And that's what the good things do. That's what the good teams do. If you ever look at a Ravens draft, okay, like I'm going to pull up Baltimore Ravens last just so I have it. If you ever look at a Ravens draft, they have guys who have the potential to be impactful, but they also have guys that help fill key roles. Like last year, Zay Flowers was the only guy that was really impactful for them, but then they drafted a variety of different players who played reserve roles. Trenton Simpson, Tavares Robinson, Caillou Kelly, like they're playing reserve roles. If we go back to even like 2022
is a very Baltimore Ravens draft.
They get Kyle Hamilton falls to him. They get him. He's an elite player. Tyler Lindenbaum falls to them. They get him. He's now an elite center. Like David Ajabo, it was coming off the ACL, so they wait for the injury. That drops him, falls to him. They find the guy, and now he's a rotational player for them, right? And it just, Travis Jones, and it just keeps going. Charlie Kohler was on that draft, right?
Isaiah Likely in the fourth round.
Yes, right? And so.
Yeah, it's an awesome draft.
Right, and it's not, and it's guys, and those, they didn't all have to contribute in that first year either. You're seeing them now step up a year or two down the road. And this is the model, right? And I've always said the Ravens are the model for drafting for sustainability because of how they do it. They let guys fall to them. They're aggressive when they need to be. They take advantage of other teams being scared of injuries or needing the guy to play now, right? Like we saw Brad Holmes take this approach. Like they were looking at JMO and they said, New Orleans needs a receiver, but New Orleans is in a spot they need a receiver that can contribute now. So they're not going to take JMO. So I don't have to trade up past them because they're going to take probably Olave. And sure enough, that's what they do. They take Olave. JMO's available because the Lions are in that same mindset of, I'm going to take the best player, whether he plays now or not, because I'm building for long term. And so this approach in this draft, I think they're going to sit, they're going to wait. They're going to find guys that kind of come to them. Like if you have a guy that's in a spot where you need it to be, go up and get that spot that if, you know, like we talked about in episode one, where all of a sudden the guy falls and now you go get him. So.
And they're in that spot.
I 100% agree.
The Lions are absolutely in that spot.
Right. And they have a couple of holes, right? Like you have a need at wide receiver. You have a need at, maybe some long-term stability on the offensive line, maybe defensive line, either edge or interior, whichever guy you need, maybe add some depth in the secondary as well. Like they have needs, but even the good teams all have needs and they always will.
They do.
Right?
Like they always do.
Exactly. Every team is going to have needs. It's just about not having to force those needs. And that's why Baltimore is so good at drafting.
And not being afraid too. And the 2022 draft is such a perfect example for the Ravens. You're drafting a safety and you're drafting a center in the first round. They'll thumb their nose to positional value, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You're not talking about too many safeties. And it admitted, you know, we were talking about Kyle Hamilton as being a generational player and people were talking about him being a top 10 player, being a top 5 player. But
right.
the Ravens weren't scared by that at all, even at, and they take him at 14, but he falls right to him, and they can afford to take a safety. They can afford to, oh, hey, one of the best interior offensive linemen dropped in our lap at 25. Okay, mm-hmm. like we can take him at 25.
Right.
Like I think it's so good what Baltimore does, and they're a perfect example of a sustainability. The Chiefs feel a little bit different just because the Chiefs have an alien at quarterback, and, yes, and they can take shortcuts and they can afford misses, and
they can afford to stop spending money on offense to spend it on defense to build the defense up because they have the alien, right?
Yeah.
Because of Mahomes.
I'm starting to get concerned about what that house of cards is going to look like now that Travis Kelce is another year older and Rashee Rice is in all the hot water that he's in. And
well, that's the rub, right?
And trading Tyreek Hill, there's a lot. It seems Patrick Mahomes a cheat code, right? It seems for a fair build yourself in the image of. I think the Baltimore Ravens are.
Mm-hmm.
Are a perfect example of sustainability, and that's who I want the Lions to be.
I think that's what Brad Holmes wants to be as well. Mm-hmm. I think his actions and the way he approaches it is so similar.
How many high profile Baltimore Ravens free agency signings are there? Like, do you ever see the Baltimore Ravens going crazy in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, occasionally, but it's rare, right? Like, because they've never needed to be because they draft so well. Like, Ozzie Newsome, when he was their GM, he's arguably the greatest GM to ever be in the NFL.
Yeah.
Like, he's amazing, and his ability to understand the board, his ability to pick players at the right spots, be patient and allow guys to fall to you also, but knowing when to move. Like, these are all things that we see in Brad Holmes, which is why we're so incredibly high on Brad Holmes' ability to build this roster, because there's so much Ozzie Newsome to Brad Holmes. And Brad has talked about, like, how Ozzie has kind of been like a role model for him. He talked, like, it was years ago when he talked about it, but like, And Brad wants to build his own way. And of course, like, less needs part of it. But like, Holmes, like, Ozzie Newsome he is the pinnacle. He is, if you can be like Ozzie, you're going to build a winner. And that's ideal. That's what you want to do. So for the Lions to do this, you've got to tie up your pillars. You've got to tie up your pillars. You've got to draft for sustainable success. So we started the conversation off by talking about, like, what do the Lions need to do, or why are they on the cusp of being elite? These are the things that they need to do, in my opinion. You need to have you need to lock those guys up. You need to add more sustainability. Keep in mind, like, San Francisco didn't just become good. It took them years. It took like 5 years of like drafting, putting guys in place, and they built their way up. They had some success along the way, but like, they had to, that slow methodical building of depth is really what has made them so good and so good for so long. And it's a matter of time for the Lions right now. Three drafts have been sensational, but it's only three drafts when you basically blew the roster up. Keep in mind, San Fran, when they started building their roster 5 years ago, that wasn't a bare bones roster either. Like, that had a really good base when Harbaugh left. And so they had something to build on, and it still took them half a decade. And that's really what the Lions need. They need some time to add more layers of depth. They need to make sure that they're being financially responsible, and they need to tie those players up. And I think the two guys that they have behind the scenes running their finances are incredibly smart, and Mike Disner and Brandon Sosna. And they have the one of the most brilliant draft-oriented minds in the NFL in Brad Holmes. And so you've got a lot of the right pieces to build it. It just may, you're maybe a year, two,
you just need time.
I mean, away from getting to the point where you're like, yeah, we can lose an injury and we'll be fine. You know what I mean? Like, you can lose a starter. You know how close they are? They lost C.J. Gardner-Johnson, who was one of their high-profile free agents, and they didn't even blink, right? Like, there was next guy up. they thought Tracy Walker was going to be the guy to replace him, and it wasn't Tracy. And to the point where they were like, oh, we'll just bench Tracy. Like in training camp, it was Kirby, Tracy, and CJ that started the training camp. Those were the three interior defensive backs. By the end of the season, it was Iffy, Kirby, and Branch. Like they were mm-hmm. like, all right, we guess we don't need CJ as much. Oh, I guess Tracy isn't playing at the level we were hoping for. And so that shows you where they're at. The trick is, can you get like that all over?
Right? Yeah.
And so I think they're moving towards it. Yeah, they're moving towards it, but they need a few more things. They need a few more guys. They need a few more depth pieces, and and you can add more talent. And if you end up, I think this is a year when you're going to see a Baltimore Ravens like draft from the Lions, where you're going to have one guy that's probably going to be a contributor and a whole bunch of bodies that are going to be really good depth. And then a guy, and then, you know, a year from now, you're like, oh, look at all these guys that they drafted. They're all of a sudden in big roles. And that's how you sustain drafting.
Yeah. There's like a whole other host of questions and stuff and other great things I want to talk about. This conversation just totally took a path of its own, and I loved every minute of it.
I think that's what makes what we're trying to do here fun, right? Like I know I said, set the table and let's start talking. And then we just were like, all right, throw the notes out. We didn't talk about really anything that we had planned, which is great. So
because like Brad Holmes and like Dan Campbell, we have time. They have time. We have time.
Mm-hmm. Yep. We are, making our way through, this whole, I don't know, what's the right adjective to describe where we are? As far as like the podcast, I don't know. I don't have a good adjective for it.
But purgatory? I know that's a noun.
No, that's good. That's, I mean, it's, yeah, we can use it as an adjective though too. Like, if you want, like, cause you're describing the time. Sure. But yeah, I mean, as POD is in podcast purgatory, we are, trying to, I think this is a good way for us to keep our voices out there, keep topics going. The response has been very positive.
undersell of all time.
I think the response has been
overwhelming and awesome.
Without trying to oversell it, I have been very jaw-dropped at times. For those who haven't, aren't on Twitter or don't pay attention, essentially the response to us trying to do more shows and people looking for a podcast alternative, I've had a lot of people subscribe to the Detroit Lions Breakdown podcast feed, which is what we're on, and more subscribers, more downloads, to the point that we have skyrocketed up the rankings. We are, according to iTunes, the number four most popular football podcast out there, like across the country, like number four, like not number four in Lions, number four
bananas.
Yeah. It's weird to be like, hey, we just passed Rich Eisen. That's weird. Right. Like that's very unusual. And then number 11 on iTunes in sports, number 9 on Spotify in sports. And I'm not, I'm not naive in saying that, oh, they're just tuning into they're tuning in for us. Like it's Lions fans making a difference, saying, we want to support what you guys do. We want to hear the voices at POD. We want to hear Lions content, and hopefully us offering these up, is a way to help satisfy that hunger. And like I said, the response from Lions fans has been a very large statement to a lot of people, a large statement to the community, a large statement to, I'll just say people that I don't want to name. But it's been a large statement. I think the Lions community has really said, we support these guys. And the results are pretty undeniable. So, yeah.
And as we're kind of in this, you know, transitory state, I think the other thing too that is so great about our community is our opportunity to engage with them and our opportunity to interact with them. And that's something that we're hoping to get the ball rolling again with Twitch and with YouTube and all that stuff, because as much as all this overwhelming support for, you know, Detroit Lions Breakdown and for Pride of Detroit and for us specifically, I think that when all of you out in listener land are listening to us, like, I feel like I can hear you guys like as I'm talking, you know what I mean? Like,
sure.
It's that extension of being part of an awesome community where we can all just share ideas and have a good time doing it. And it's awesome seeing that being championed when we're right next to a show like, you know, I won't name names, but there's a lot of debate shows and stuff, right? There's a lot of like negative talk that happens. And I feel like we have good, honest conversations, and I love that our community can be a part of that stuff. So
absolutely. Let's close this one. We probably we're making people's commutes longer. I think than we had intended.
Now it's so. For your trip to and your trip back.
Obviously you have some more questions we didn't even get to. So I think we should get to those and as soon as we can and get another podcast in the bank for people after this. But for now, I want to thank everybody for supporting this, this new venture that we're on here. And until next time, let's go Lions.